I love that version of that hymn. I remember hearing that if we're not breaking our vows, we're not aiming high enough. It's a nice spin, right? So to me, that hymn speaks of aspiration. The more we commit to the spiritual path, the more we're going to notice all the ways we mess up. And I once heard someone describe the spiritual path not so much as a climb up a lofty mountain, but more a descent into a deep valley. At the top of the mountain, we see just the peaks, small, manageable. But as we look down, we see the whole of the mountain expanding below us. And the more aware I become, the more aware I become of all the flaws I have, and I have so many. The more I practice being mindful, the more I notice all the times I'm not. So I'm comforted by this idea that even though we've broken our vows 1,000 times, we are still welcome, whoever we are. We are not asked to be perfect. As I mentioned in a sermon very recently, we are asked to be willing to begin again. Theologian Martin Buber calls us promise-making, promise-breaking, promise-renewing creatures, with the emphasis on the promise-renewing. That's where the power is. And that's the focus of the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. It's about recognizing where we've messed up, clearing the slate with each other, and beginning again with renewed promises for the coming year. Which sounds nice and simple, right? Clearing the slate. I picture a chalkboard wiped clean with a wet cloth, dishes stacked on a table and whisked away to a nearby kitchen. But like so many spiritual disciplines, the depth to which we experience transformation, the extent of relief and renewal we experience seems closely connected to the depth we are willing to apply them in our lives. And so it is with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And while we are not a Jewish congregation and I am not a rabbi, there is much we can take away from the yearly practice during these Jewish high holy days when we apply them in our lives. In particular, there is much we can take away from the days of awe, the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. 10 days of rigorous self-examination. 10 days of clearing the slate through making amends and forgiving those who have hurt us. Now, if you're like most people, the words rigorous self-examination, making amends, and forgiveness don't necessarily make you want to come running. How many of us say, after all, yes, I want to bring to light all the things I feel bad or ashamed about and talk about them with people who are probably mad at me? That sounds like fun. Or, yes, please, I want to be reminded of a bunch of hurtful things people did to me, painful things they said to me, and the terrible ways that made me feel, and then just let it go. Most of us don't relish these opportunities. And yet I offer for your consideration the possibility that this pair of spiritual tools may be two of the most profound relationship healers at humanity's disposal, as well as healers of ourselves and our connection with God or with our sense of feeling at home in this world. Two of the most profound and two of the hardest. Take forgiveness. I appreciate what writer Anne Lamott has to say on the topic. I went around for a long time saying that I am not one of those Christians who is heavily into forgiveness, she writes. Instead, I am one of the other kind. But even though I thought that was funny and actually true, it started to be too painful to stay that way. Amen. I like a little punctuation for my sermon. They say we are not punished for the sin, but by the sin. And I began to feel, she writes, punished by my unwillingness to forgive. And by the time I decided to become one of the ones who is heavily into forgiveness, it was like trying to become a marathon runner in middle age. Everything inside of me either recoiled as from a hot flame or laughed a little too hysterically. I tried to will myself into forgiving various people who had harmed me directly or indirectly over the years. 4 former Republican presidents. 3 relatives, 2 old boyfriends, and 1 teacher in a pear tree. It was the 12 days of Christmas meets Taxi Driver. But in the end, I could only pretend I had forgiven. I decided I was starting off with my sights aimed too high. As C.S. Lewis says in his book, Mere Christianity, if we really want to learn how to forgive, perhaps we had better start with something easier than the Gestapo. Lamont makes no bones about the challenges of forgiveness, and there are many. Perhaps we don't start in the hardest spot. Maybe we don't start with the Gestapo. At the end of last week's service on covenant, someone mentioned a struggle with our first principle. We covenant to respect the inherent worth and dignity of all people. The struggle had to do with applying that principle in particular to a political leader that this person is frustrated with. How to honor a promise to respect all when we do not. But maybe we don't have to start with the hardest of our nemeses. Maybe we can start closer to home. In that same article, Anne Lamott goes on to describe her strivings to forgive someone who she called an enemy light, L-I-T-E, the parent of a boy in her son's second grade class. A woman who, as Lamott put it, always wore spandex shorts simply because she could. She was that toned. A woman who always picked up her son on time, who volunteered to bake for the class whenever baking was needed, whose son was excelling in second grade reading when Lamott's own son was struggling. And to top that off, this woman gave Lamott some of her used first grade books, handing them over with what was unmistakably, as Lamott described, a patronizing smile. Lamott goes on to list further transgressions from this woman and her own pained reactions to them. She goes on to describe her attempts at forgiveness, her abiding resentment, and her struggles with both. She goes on, finally, after what one assumes has been many months of tortured inner anguish, to have a personal awakening. The veil, she writes, was lifted. In a moment of truth, she understood something about the roots of her resentment against this woman. Turns out they were a lot less about her spandex, baked goods, or used books, and a lot more about Lamott's own unmet, perhaps unrealistic, expectations of herself. In that moment of insight, a new way opens, and eventually, she and the woman start to become friends. Baked goods exchange hands, this time with appreciation, and life, as Lamott describes it, is suddenly good again. A happy ending. It's not always quite that way, of course. The path of forgiveness is not always humorous, nor does it always end with baked goods and smiles all around. There are times forgiveness is not just about letting go of distorted projections. Sometimes people really do hurt us, sometimes gravely. There are times when situations call for a dimension of justice, as Sarah Moore Campbell points out in our first reading, and even when forgiveness is given, it does not simply wipe away guilt. Because forgiveness is not about pretending problematic behavior is okay. It's separate from setting good boundaries. The fact is, if someone has done something hurtful or is not able to keep certain promises or live up to certain standards, it makes good sense to set limits to prevent them from repeating a pattern of behavior that's been hurtful in the past. Enabling harmful behavior to continue is not good for anyone. Forgiveness is less about taking or not taking certain actions and more about where we are coming from when we do or do not take them. And that is a journey of the heart, a potential path to freedom, opening to others and to life and for us when we practice it. And while being forgiving, doing that heart work to let go of our attachment to the hurt that someone has caused us, while that is our work to do, and we don't have to wait for anyone else to recognize their part before we begin to let ours go, it's a different story when we flip it around. When we are the one who has transgressed, when we're the one who stepped on toes, when we are the ones who've messed up, when we want forgiveness, there is more to do. We must begin with acknowledgement that we've done something wrong. We must begin with apology. We might even need to make amends. So practicing forgiveness, one piece of the days of awe, making amends for wrongdoing is another. And this week, as I was reading up on making amends and apologies and how these can work during the High Holy Days, I was feeling pretty good about the fact that for the most part, I couldn't think of much of anything I needed to atone for, which is, of course, the moment an email popped into my inbox. It's always like that. "We need to talk," it said. Short and, well, sweet isn't the first response I had to it. It was more like, uh-oh. The email's author wanted to talk right away, and we connected that afternoon. It turned out I had done something. I had been insensitive. I did something hurtful, and this person was mad. I tried to apologize. The operative word is tried. I explained how it happened, what my good intentions had been, how I was sorry if the other person experienced what I did as hurtful. "Yeah, I've heard that one before," the person responded dryly. Not surprisingly, they heard my self-defending apology as a resounding sorry, not sorry. After all, I did say, if the person experienced what I did was hurtful, then sorry. But for my part, this did not feel like a clean slate. There was no neatly cleared table here. I tried again. "I'm really sorry that what I did was hard on you. I didn't mean for it to be. Let me explain. Blah, 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 blah." My apology continued falling on deaf ears, and I didn't like it much either, frankly. I realized I was struggling inside myself. My mind was justifying, rationalizing, defending, and refusing to accept wrongdoing on my part until finally something said in me, "Ellen," love it when my voice sounds like that. Oddly reminiscent of parental voices, but anyway. "Ellen," this voice said, "this person is hurting. You were the one who took the action that left them feeling this way. It doesn't matter what you intended. They hurt, you caused it. And when I saw it that way, I felt the hurts." Which I finally said, "I'm sorry, I hurt you, that hurts me." And then I shut up. And something felt like it shifted. In the tone of the other person's voice, I realized a fence had come down in me when I stopped trying to explain. And perhaps they picked up on something more genuine and more authentic than what I had offered before. Something seemed to shift for them. And I realized I felt worse and better all at the same time. messy stuff, this human relating. It calls us to humility, defenselessness, willingness, openness to some uncomfortable feelings. How is it that the spiritual path seems constantly to call for uncomfortable feelings? There's confusion about who's right and who's wrong. What's my part? What's yours? How can I fix it? And what if I can't? What if it's one of those things you just can't fix? What if there are no words? Or what if it's too big? This particular incident wasn't that. In fact, I called the person and asked if I could preach about it, and the answer was yes. I also received an assurance that they were over it and were no longer plotting my demise, which was comforting, sort of, except for the idea that someone might have been plotting my demise in the first place. But I will say the incident and further reflection showed me how my previous blissful idea that I didn't have much to atone for seriously lacked some depth. While I generally do okay on the thoughtfulness front, there are countless ways I know I could do better. And while I don't generally steal from people or hit them, I am part of larger systems that hurt people, and I often shut that right out of my mind. But a widened and deepened awareness is part of the point of a holiday like this one. Not as an excuse for guilt or self-flagellation, but as information we can use to become more deeply whole and able to be of service. In the time leading up to Yom Kippur, Jewish people are encouraged to make their personal amends, to right personal wrongs, and to forgive those who have hurt them. And then on the day of Yom Kippur itself, the Day of Atonement, Jewish people have an opportunity to come together to set things right, not with people, but with the universe, with God, and with themselves. But the interesting part here, as Lynn Unger, a Jewish UU, describes it in a recent article on this holiday, is that the litany of atonement that a Jewish congregation recites on Yom Kippur is a long list of things that we have done and apologize for it all together. But what's interesting is it doesn't matter whether you personally have done any particular piece of that long list of errors. The whole community atones as one. You take care of your own business before Yom Kippur arrives, but when it comes to apologizing to God, the community takes responsibility as a whole. And while it may seem a bit unfair to apologize for things you haven't done, there is something about atoning as a community that makes so much sense. Take racism, for instance, as Lynn writes. That is a grave wrong that belongs to a community as a whole. You can't really blame any given white person for the unearned privilege their race grants them. No single white person asked to live in a system that gives them unfair advantage in so many ways. And no single white person can really choose to give those unfair advantages back. It takes the community, the whole system, recognizing the long history and continuing practice of injustice in order to make reparations and move toward lasting change. That's just one example. The environment is another, or war, or growing income inequality. There are many ways in which we get to atone as a whole community. So today, as we reflect on the power of these practices, and I encourage you to reflect on who you might need to apologize to, or who it might be time to forgive, as you contemplate that question, I invite you to participate in our closing litany, a litany of atonement that all are invited to say together, a communal apology to ourselves, to each other, to the God of your understanding, or simply to the greater community here or globally. I invite you now to rise in body or in spirit. It's number 1037 in your teal hymnal. I will say the first words, and Nonetta is going to play the melody for us. first, and then we'll all sing the line together. You're invited to all sing the line together. Please rise in body or in spirit.